PubMed tried for a while a sort of system like that. And it would be like under every paper, you'd have like a comment section like you have on YouTube. But nobody used it because it was not anonymous. It was just kind of, if they commented, it would be these inane comments like, well done, congratulations, super interesting. So it really didn't work.
Welcome to Further Research Needed. Broccoli, pasta, I think I mixed up the notes here. Doesn't matter. This is the podcast with straightforward questions and not so straightforward answers. Today we're asking the questions, are we ready to change peer review? I'm Hannes Feirer, and for this episode I'm joined by a guest, who I will introduce in a moment, and my two co-hosts.
Jan-Philipp Reising.
And Chris Wood.
With us today is Pedro Vilica. Am I saying that correctly?
Good enough. I've been an immigrant for too long, so I accept changes to my name.
Dame. He's a postdoc in our science building, but also he's well-known, or he's mostly known for his cartoons. Do you want to tell us about that, Pedro?
Yeah, so on top of being a researcher, I also do cartoons mostly about science, and I publish them on the internet under the name of Pedromix. And they are just not particularly highbrow. They're usually puns, but occasionally with some more political content.
They're definitely very funny. I highly recommend everyone to check them out. Today we want to talk about peer review, though, and the publishing system. A while ago we talked about the publishing system already, and now we're getting back to it. However, this time we're not going to get talk about the system per se, but only this very specific thing that is the peer review system. And for many of us, the peer review system is kind of one of the most integral parts of science, because after all, this kind of determines what we call true or not. And this is especially relevant with in the corona crisis right now, where preprint servers, MedArchive and BioArchive saw so many submissions, but also scientists were increasingly more happy to accept preprints as true, or at least as facts, and work from there on instead of waiting for peer review. So I think this is a relevant topic in many ways, but then there are also other platforms. There's pubpeer.com, for example, or .org, that we will talk about for sure. Overall, I want to lead this discussion in three directions, maybe one after the other. And I'm just going to pitch them to you guys quickly so you know what's coming, and then we can just get right into the discussion. So one thing that I would like to talk about is improvements on the current systems that have happened already, but also some that we could still undertake, or maybe reasons for why we don't. The other thing is incentives and acknowledgements or rewards for peer reviewing. This is an important part of the system that reviewers are not paid at this moment and might get other rewards or not. But in any way, it's something that I think we as a community have to talk about. And the last thing is the importance of post-publication peer review, which at this point doesn't really exist. But I want to ask you guys if you think it should, and in what way it should, and if it could replace pre-publication peer review altogether. Maybe I should start with explaining what peer review means per se. So thank you, Philip. So once we did our lab things and we found something that we think is worthy of, it is worthy enough to be shown to other scientists, then we submit it to a journal. These journals are specialized in publishing scientific articles. And they then send these papers that we write, our articles, to other experts in the field, which will have a look at them, read through, and give their advice to the editor, to the journal, and their opinion if this is worth publishing or not, if this is well done scientifically, if this is novel enough, if the conclusion follows from the data, and so on. And then this will be published, or maybe the editor will ask for more revisions in the lab, actually, or on the manuscript, maybe only in the writing, and then it will in the end either be published or rejected. Anything that I forgot, guys?
This process often takes years. In bad cases, takes years. It's a very slow process.
Yeah, I mean, can be something from weeks to, I think, over a year is not rare.
Do we know if the length has been increasing?
I think there are a lot of undertakings right now that want to shorten it. Maybe that's already part of the first point of conversation. Improvements on the system is the length, I guess. Maybe I'm still processing a question, Pedro. I don't know if it's increasing, but I have the impression papers are more massive than they used to be.
That's definitely, in chemistry, the length of a typical article in, say, JAX has increased. Plus, they now have supporting information, which can run into hundreds of pages and figures and graphs. And each graph is like, can be weeks or months of work just for one graph. So it's the time. Sometimes it's not the time that it takes to get comments back from the reviewers, which often do take a lot of time, but what the reviewers ask for, they say, oh, could you just put a graph in showing this, and that would take months of work, and it's very it can be soul destroying to have that, especially if you have to get a publication for a certain reason. Say, I think in Sweden you have to get a certain number of publications for your PhD.
Correct. I can only speak of the Karolinska Institute, but we have published 2 peer-reviewed articles, yes.
Yeah, so it can be, you know, you're at the end of 4 or 5 years of work and someone tells you, please go and do 6 months more work. Just, you know, that's pretty destructive.
It's not rare, yeah.
I think...
And spend a bit more money.
Oh, yeah, and then there's the money problem, yeah.
But I think to answer your question, I would say, at least since I've been in science, so maybe the last 10 years or so, it didn't feel like it takes more time. Since I've been in science, it feels like a big problem that it just takes forever for stuff to be published. But if I'm reading articles maybe from the 90s or 80s, they're a lot shorter. So I would assume the peer review time kind of goes along with that. But because it's definitely, I guess, an interesting question.
Someone could just go back and look at all those. Because every time a paper is published, you see the date that it was submitted and the date that it was accepted. And it would be interesting if someone had gone through that and see if the interval has been increasing. I suspect it has because of what we just discussed.
Yeah. So in my bit of research on peer review, which there's a bit, I didn't find anything like that. What I did find was, which is very interesting, since we talk about how the system is flawed, or as Chris called it, broken even, is that, so there was this one study where people sent out identical manuscripts with, I think, 10 mistakes to reviewers. And on average, I think they found something like 2.7 or so. Numbers are off the top of my head, I'm not sure. Like less than a third of the flaws were actually found in the end. That's kind of, this kind of puts into question the meaningfulness of peer review at the way we have it right now. Not altogether, but of course the way of how we're undertaking peer review at this moment.
I mean, there's a lot of trust. The whole system is based on trust. So one of the key problems for chemistry is repeatability. I mean, it's a problem for all the sciences, but repeatability of synthesis comes up again and again. But peer review doesn't check that. Even when I'm reviewing a document, I trust that when they say they added 5 grams, they actually added 5 grams. Like, they weren't just lying or whatever.
When I was a student, when I was before becoming, you know, during my degree, I naively thought that every single paper was then reproduced in the journal's labs. I thought there was no trust involved. Of course, I had no idea about the magnitude of these experiments. And then when I realized, oh, wait, so we just believe that they've done things correctly. And it kind of like, yeah, you should do that. But of course, we know now that a lot of people, because of whatever pressure or personality types, will maybe take advantage of the fact that this is based on trust.
Yep.
And this is possibly one of the main reasons why peer review is flawed.
I think it's the major one. Like, we all talk about it. We all gripe about it over coffee. We say, oh, I've just tried something. Oh, it didn't work. Or it works half as well. And maybe we will informally tell each other, oh, don't trust anything from this group or that person because they're cowboys or whatever the phrase is. But there's no way for us to impart that knowledge to the world. Now, they're starting to be this, what Hannes mentioned, the pub peer network is a really useful community where you can comment about papers and say, hang on, guys, this is a bit dodgy, or however you want to phrase it. And that's really helpful, but it's not baked into the publication system at the moment. And so these papers can stay up online, and as Anna said, they are considered scientific fact because they've been been peer reviewed, and they stay there until a retraction happens. But retractions take even longer than peer review and are intensely political, and often don't happen in the cases of, say, more controversial, or, you know, someone can just claim, oh, you didn't do it right. You know, it'll always come back to me that if I was trying to reproduce something, well, I'm the rubbish scientist, not the paper that I'm trying to review, which is always the problem.
But I guess the very, very first question in a conversation like this is just stating, do we even need peer review? And I think we'll all agree that that's a yes, but maybe someone from outside the world of science might think, why do you even need to do this? You just make the science and it's out there. And I guess an example of why we need it is exactly what you mentioned in the introduction, the amount of fast science, no peer review that went on during the COVID expansion of knowledge. That, for example, journalists had no idea that something on BioArchive is not the same thing as something in a journal. And a lot of weird conspiracy, you know, the virus was made in a lab, these kind of things were being put out. So I guess, you know, it is important that this exists. None of us is saying that just abolish it completely.
Absolutely not.
You know, we should start with that, of course.
Definitely. And I think if peer review works well, it's also a big increase in just the quality of the manuscript. If I do my research, I might have people at my institution that I talk with and collaborators that I interact with, but sending it to someone at least theoretically impartial to what I'm doing, but actually knowledgeable in the field, the comments I get back, maybe I don't like to do that extra experiment that takes 6 months, but if it's a good experiment, then this might bump up the quality of the actual science. Or maybe there's like a flaw in my experimental design that I haven't addressed. So if peer review works well, then it's an amazing system to have that's very beneficial to science in general.
What do you guys feel when you get reviewer comments? Do you feel excited to hear what other people say? Or is it sort of like you feel apprehensive of being judged? What's your feeling?
I think we antagonize the reviewer often, right? We treat them as the demon who wants to make our life harder. We just want to get our thing published, which is in many ways a different issue also, because as Chris said, we need these publications in our education, but also, of course, to get grants and so on. I find it, when the negative, a bit difficult to deal with them.
I feel I certainly still carry a lot of imposter syndrome. Like, I'm always feeling like I'll get called out on my experiments somehow. And in a way, that's good. It makes me judge and check everything I do. But then when the reviewer comments are coming, I'm always worried that they are going to have realized the mistake I made or the something and call me out on that. So I'm definitely more apprehensive than excited when the comments come back, because I feel like, I'm going to be tripped up by them in some way. But it is important. I if I think about it logically, I want to be tripped up. I want not to publish wrong results or wrong interpretations of results. It's just, we're all human. You really want to get this thing published or whatever.
But did you ever have bad experiences, like a review process being extremely unfair? Or has it been that most of the quibbles have been with the editor?
No, I've not had a bad bad experience in specific. So I've not really had the problem of long experiments or whatever being asked for. Mostly my reviewers understand what I said. Sometimes there's a question of language or something where they say, did you mean this? And you're like, no, I didn't mean that. And they're like, okay, fine, whatever, change the word, it's fine. I think the elephant in the room, though, is the concept of impact. And this is where the reviewers and you often disagree, where they say, where you say, this is the most important research in the world right now. It's going to change everything. And the reviewers go, bullshit. And often they say bullshit and say like, oh, here's this paper from the 1960s that did what you did before. So you're not the first, which is very helpful because you can't now search the literature completely. There's probably always someone's done it. But then if they don't have that...
I think what you're touching upon here is... What you're touching upon here is that the experts that are reviewing our papers are often also our competitors. And they might have conflicting opinions or just a conflict of interest in the way that the results you're publishing or you're trying to publish might be hindering their research in a way, or maybe they're working on a similar thing or so. So I don't want to claim that this is always the case, but it is definitely the case here and there that they try to make it a bit harder. Again, everyone of us is also reviewing. So, of course, this is, goes in all directions. And no one is completely impartial here. So I think the bias in peer review is one of the things we kind of have to talk about. And there have been a few efforts to minimize that. This would be blinded or maybe even double-blinded peer review, where blinded would mean the reviewer doesn't know who the authors of the paper are, and the other way around for double-blinded, to reduce bias by name, fame in the field, fame of the institution, by gender, and so on.
I would love to add a third level of blindness in there, which is not knowing what journal you're submitting to.
That
the process was entirely pure based on what's written on the manuscript, and not because one thing that Chris mentioned was about impact, and I see a lot of reviewers taking up the role of gatekeepers for the journals. And sort of like, oh, this is a high impact factor journal, so I need to be really harsh because when I try to publish in this journal, it's super hard. And it's like, that's not your role, right? You judge what the experiments are, if it's novel, for sure, and if the conclusions are supported by the evidence. This whole thing of being harsher because I'm reviewing for Nature than if I'm reviewing for JI or whatever, then I don't know. What do you think? Should reviewers be defending the private business that is publishing houses?
I couldn't agree more, Pedro.
Yeah, I completely agree as well. Like, it's just... like the experiences I had where the reviewer is writing something that's not in their job description, so to speak. Well, yeah, this doesn't really, it's not that important and stuff like that. It should be about the science. That's your job. And then the editor's job is to decide whether Nature or whatever plus one actually wants to publish this or not. And
I think
we all know, like, for example, replication studies might not be as fancy or nice or novel, but they are extremely important for science right now. But it's just hard to get into a journal if you're not only fighting the editor to get it in, but also your reviewers going, well, but there was this publication there, and then this is not even novel. So I agree. They should not be gatekeeping at all.
I think I disagree in a way, because like, the editor that you've then transferred all of the power of gatekeeping to an editor. And often journal editors are scientists or ex-scientists of a certain field, but they can't be experts or know the depth of the field that they're editing for, particularly for the general journals like Nature. For the more specific journals, then they would be the Journal of Microbiology, DNA A the editor of that's probably going to know about those sorts of things. But for the general journals, they can't be experts or can't even have an overview of the entire field. So in that sense, it's possibly, there is a certain amount of judgment involved that needs to be communicated in some respects, because one of the benefits of this of a system that we have at the moment is that we have a filtering effect. I can't read all the papers in my field, and therefore I need some system that highlights the more interesting papers to me. I'm not saying the system we have at the moment is perfect, but we would you do need some kind of filtering, because otherwise I just don't have the time to read all those papers.
But I mean, that's been the role of journals for a long time to kind of do this. You know, there's so much in this field. We'll just show you what we think is the best and what you might be interested, which then leads to certain topics being hot and others not being so hot. But we're living in a world where we have search engines. Like, we can look for the things we're interested. The whole idea that I'm going to pick up a Nature physical copy and I'm going to go through to find out what's cool is, I mean, for me personally, that doesn't happen. This idea that they are somehow telling us what I should be reading or not, I don't feel like that's necessary anymore.
I agree. I think there's the advent of the internet has so much to add to the system that as it is. I mean, my ideal system would be a combination of like Reddit and a YouTube comment system. So you know, the things you're interested in get moved up, and you can also search by topic. And then you also see whether people enjoyed the piece and add, you know, has a rating. So you go, oh, this is lots of people like this, not so many people like that, or I don't know.
But I may be jumping the gun a bit here, but I think PubMed tried for a while a sort of system like that, which was called Pub Commons, I think. Mm. And the idea was this would be a post-publication peer review. And it would be like under every paper, you'd have like a comment section like you have on YouTube. But nobody used it because it was not anonymous. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of, if they commented, it would be these inane comments like, well done, congratulations, super interesting. So it really didn't work.
The LinkedIn. And then they just...
exactly. I mean,
the complete opposite of that is you said, oh, you want like a mixture of Reddit and YouTube. But if you've looked into Reddit and the YouTube comment section lately, there's also a lot of toxic stuff, a lot of trolls.
Yeah.
So... you would want something in between, like that PubMed system where everybody's just like tapping each other on the shoulder going like, amazing job, you're such a good scientist, good for you, and like the toxic sludge that might wash over you if you go into YouTube.
What determines which way you go is if the comment section is anonymous or not. And unfortunately, there's no halfway into anonymity. You're either... you know, showing your identity or not. And if you are, then you are more likely to just tap people on the shoulder. If you're anonymous, then a lot more people would just be savage.
I sort of disagree
with
that. This
is a bit of a segue to my second point. Do you want to disagree or can I?
I still want to disagree, but we can definitely move on if you want to.
No, if you have something substantial to this.
I think anonymity is important, but if you look at something, for example, like Stack Overflow, which is like the forum for any kind of programming, if you have any program problem, any error, you go on Stack Overflow, which is anonymous, but has sort of like a level system, like you have to have that many posts and that many questions and that many answers, and there's like a score connected to your account, basically, that shows how helpful you've been in the past. And it's very technical. Like, there's no trolling as far as I'm aware going on. It's like, it's just about the thing you're asking and then like normal internet problems that people are being rude and stuff like that. But it's very like on topic focused, while YouTube could be anything in comparison.
I don't believe such a system has to fail. I think such a system can work. And this is a bit of a segue to the second point that I want to ask you guys. And this is in how far reviewers get acknowledged for their review, which is not much right now, what the incentives are, and if we should maybe change that, because right now they're doing the journalist's job for free next to the authors of the paper who also submit their thing. Not even for free, they actually pay for it. But the quality control of the review is done for free. Therefore, maybe it might be done a bit short and sloppy because everyone's under pressure and has a lot of stress. Would it make sense? Can we justify giving them some kind of reward or acknowledgement? Or what are your thoughts on this?
I think as you can't have it both ways. If you're a private company making money out of free work, then it just doesn't hold. Like, either you pay me to do this work for you, and then you make a profit out of it, that's fine. Or I work for free, but you also don't make any money out of this. This the current situation just doesn't work from the labor point of view. I'm not talking about the science community and the responsibility we have, but from the labor relation point of view.
I completely agree. I think the arguments that journals need to make money because of print costs, and you know they actually do a physical thing like moving paper around, is no longer valid. Like, and with the internet, it's completely destroyed it. And there are examples of communities on the internet that self-moderate and produce highly accurate documents. Wikipedia is an excellent example where if we completely deleted the journals and started one repository of self, you know, everyone does it for free and the community generated around it, it would be self-sustaining. There are, you know, it would be excellent. But we're stuck with this hybrid now that's just a profit.
Yeah, it's weird because it's this what you say about, you know, they're not paying because it's you know, they need to make money because they need to print things, which obviously we don't need. But also once it's accepted, they will charge us, I don't know, $800 per color figure.
Yes.
As if I'm ever again going to buy the physical journal and read it like that. Mm-hmm. It's just they're really on purpose getting stuck in this old-fashioned model.
Every time the screen changes from red to blue, it costs them, you know, significant pounds.
Just to play the devil's advocate for a second, I think if you talk to a journal employee and tell them, well, why don't you just pay the scientists who are reviewing your papers, I think what they're going to say is something like, well, it kind of biases the scientific process and you add sort of monetary incentives, which is not a good thing. So, okay, I'm not doing a good job here as a devil's advocate.
I don't, yeah.
It's like you might be slightly...
They can try to take this serious. Like, what would be the ethical concerns here? Would a reviewer do a worse job, or would they make a better job because they would be paid by the hour? Or how would you imagine such a system? On what basis would they be paid? Per accepted paper, obviously not, otherwise they would just like...
No, if the system was you get paid if you say this is a good paper, then of course that doesn't work. It should be, look, here's a revision, give us a report, and whether it's positive or negative, we'll pay you the same. I mean, that's...
But then,
I don't think there's any other way this could fly, right?
But then there's a question. So do you... If a senior PI reviews a paper, or a just starting postdoc, let's say, or a PhD student reviews a paper, do you pay them the same, or do you scale it to their ink? Because it's not really worth the PI's time being paid, you know, 500 kroner for whatever. Whereas for a PhD student, that might be the, you know, beers night out, not in Sweden.
Yeah. I guess this is where a ranking system like the one Jan was talking about would be useful. It was sort of like, okay, how many years have you been in academia? How many papers do you have in the field? And how many times have you reviewed before? And instead of just looking at the title, you would just look, okay, this person is prolific in helping and developing the field, so I guess you get paid more. But then you have the problem of paying different people different money for the same work.
I think so. It I don't know.
Also means
same.
That the PI couldn't hand down the review to postdocs or PhD students, and they would actually, I'm not saying they don't do it. I am sure every reviewer that is a professor signed my review did actually do it themselves, but often it's not the case. We all know that.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with that? Who?
Well, I think that's a small problem that exists, that for early stage researchers and PhD students, there should be some recognition that they had that input. I think PIs need to grow up and admit to it, and then we can even if it's just a comment like reviewed by this PI and this PhD student, then we'd know what the system was like. Because, you know, when you see a paper and it says it's a two author paper, PI and a student, you know the student did all the work and the PI didn't do any of the work. So we know that's just out there in the world, but at least the student gets recognition for it. So we could do that very easily. It's just not done at the moment.
I'm also wondering if we're trying to fix a system that's like fundamentally broken. Like right now we are thinking about, okay, how could we kind of integrate funding reviewers for the amount of work? integrating it with like the established publishing system with journals that are kind of making money from both sides. So why not cut out the middleman and go for something like Wikipedia or Stack Overflow or something? Because then you're kind of like removing the financial incentive, right? So fixing, kind of like adding on to a broken system might not be the best solution anyways.
Well, it's easily said, but the publishing system isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon, right?
Well, it's our decision, right? If everybody, I mean, it's kind of like a stupid thing to say, but if everybody stopped publishing in nature would just die, because what are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, but the of course, problem is I completely agree, but it's not going to happen.
Our career prospects are still tied in with the metrics that these journals generate. Mm. I wonder for a long time if there's any other job in a public situation, like you're a public servant, like in theory we are, whose career advancement is based on how much profit you give to a private company. It's like, could we just live in a completely public situation, sort of like the United Nations style institution for the whole world that manages how scientific papers are reviewed, and they will recruit people to review it, and then they will do the publishing, and every country pays, you know, a percentage of their GDP to keep it going.
I think that's really
so
nice.
I hate to bring you guys back to topic. The question I'm asking, you're doing a very great job, all of you guys. But the question
just for the record here, you did make a whipping motion with your hand while you did that.
I might have done that. I'm going to add in a sound here. Actually, it was like a lesser thing. I tried to loop you guys back, right?
Good.
I tried to bring you guys back to topic. And the question I was asking isn't how do we fix the publishing system and at the same time also improve the reviewing system, which I would also be definitely pro. But just taking the review system by itself, like what's the, for the scientific community, best way to review a paper? Is it, let's put this in a reductio ad absurdum. Does it help the paper if two random people scroll over and send it back? Is that the way we want to review papers, or do we envision some other system? And we have undertaken some improvements, for example, blinded or double blinded review, open peer review where people can see the reviewer's comments and the changes done in the paper after publication. This is rare, but it does exist. And maybe some more things. And I think, in my opinion, the most relevant part is post-publication peer review. That's something that was basically impossible back then when you had to read everything by print. But now the internet opened up the possibility that you can keep making changes to your manuscript. And also you can comment on every paper in your field independently from where it's published. That's my question to you guys.
I think peer review is really important, or post peer review, but there's no good system right now how it works. But for your like initial point, I think we can't really talk about peer review we can't really talk about peer review without talking about incentives, right? Why are people doing this? Like, in a perfect world, every PI would take its whatever Mondays off to just peer review and do a good job and take the time that it actually takes. But in reality, that's like bottom shelf priorities, right? If you do a really shit job as a reviewer, nothing is going to happen. You're just going to send it back. And most likely the journal, like worst case, the journal doesn't even realize, right, that you did a shit job, because they don't have the expertise to actually do that. So why are people reviewing at all? Well, it's about probably just being in the loop what other people are doing, so you know maybe 6 months, maybe a year beforehand what other people are doing, which is a really bad incentive to review a paper. Or it's like something about idealism in science, and as I guess we all know, idealism in science is really nice, but it doesn't get you really far once you're hit with the realities of life, that you're already working way too much and there's time pressure, there's money pressure and all of that. So I think we need to change the incentives, because with the work amount that we have, you can't just rely on people being, well, it's science and I have to do something for science just out of idealism.
I kind of disagree with that. I think it's incredible how much energy people put into stuff, not just for monetary gain or not just for a specific gain. Like, we're all here today doing this podcast just so we can talk and, you know, disseminate ideas and talk science, which is cool.
What do you mean? People, I'm not getting paid.
Are we not getting rich, Chris?
Well, okay, sorry. A plea to all of our listeners. We would like to get rich, but we can't. But again, Wikipedia and other examples on the internet are that, you know, people do contribute a lot of content for free. I mean, maybe they hope to become famous. Maybe that will be the incentive system we could build into our review. Like, oh man, this person is the top in the world for reviewing chemistry papers. That was just an excellent review.
Science influencer.
Yeah. Or like those videos of people playing video games. It'll be people will actively watch people review papers because it's just such a you know, kick. Be excellent.
Oh, wow. Can you imagine people being full-time reviewers?
Well,
I think I do, yeah.
Just as a thought experiment?
I think if you paid, then yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've had a good run at working in a lab, and because a lot of peer reviewing, okay, there's a grand view of things, where does this fit in the literature, but then there's also the nitty-gritty, like, oh, this method is bollocks, or you've overinterpreted, or, you know, replication stuff. So you need to still be kind of close to the methods. So if you were just a peer review after 20 years, you maybe wouldn't be able to peer review anymore. Or even 10.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, let's say, I don't know, it's so common that people leave academia after, what do they call it? People get stuck in their postdoc and they're like postdoc for 10 years, but then they're not attractive for academia. Permadoc. Not attractive for industry anymore, and they also can't become a PI anymore. I guess that happens.
Oh, stop describing
but at the same
me.
Time, yes,
this is quite depressing now.
What?
Do you hear everybody holding back their tears?
I think we might need a whole episode on this, because the exact parallel is teaching in academia, because often it's not paid, and there's a question about how much PIs put effort into teaching when it's not the thing that they're judged by for their income or for their like perception in the field. So maybe we should shelve this one, because we will digress and Hannes will get his whip out.
If this was a TV show, Chris's character, like, what do they call it when they have their catchphrase? Your catchphrase would be, we need a whole episode for this. We should do the episode on this. That's your thing. You say it every time.
It just means there's so much stuff to talk about. There's so much wrong with science.
Yeah.
It's so wrong.
It's going to be 100 years of
To finish
podcast.
My thought, a person who got kind of, who was a permadoc for 10 years and has a hard time finding other jobs would be the perfect full-time reviewer, because they are definitely the expert in the field. They've spent like years in that field in the lab and are definitely the perfect reviewer. So maybe for these people, full-time reviewing, at least for the time they are the expert, but also reviewing like keeps you up to date so you still know what's happening, would make you a great full-time reviewer.
Yeah, and I agree. And like a lot of the problems I see with academia in general, not to take down another path, but is that there's no full-time jobs at some point, right? You're like getting a postdoc is doable, and then every step above that on the ladder just gets increasingly more difficult. So if there are just more options of what you can actually do in academia and get paid for it and make a living and have a stable job security, I think you're just going to hold more smart people who, like, governments spend a lot of money on to stay in science and not just kind of like throw in the towel and become, I don't know, I don't want to say taxi drivers, but, you know, like do a job that they're well, well overqualified for. So I think opening up these job possibilities is really, really a way forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think this goes along with what I've been saying before, is that we need more auxiliary jobs in science, people who do reviewing, more teaching, things I can't think of off the top of my head. Peter, what are you thinking of? Am I still describing you? I don't know.
I am officially a lab manager. Thank you. That's my title in KI.
Do you want to do some
senior lab manager? I mean, they even throw the age in there.
Wow.
Senior lab manager. Then I will add this into the intro where I introduced you as a postdoc. I'm sorry. I will.
So, but maybe, like, now we talked about the first idea you mentioned. What about post peer review? do we even need peer review anymore if we have post peer review? If you're like able to update your manuscript dynamically, you have like different versions, like put something on BioArchive as the initial version, then you get some peer review from like random people like Wikipedia. You start integrating it, maybe do another experiment, then that's your version 2. And then you just keep building and updating that publication.
Mm. That would make it even harder to keep up with the literature if individual papers are also changing.
Yeah, geez.
That is true.
Yeah, in that sense...
But it's a good idea, I agree.
In that sense, it's not a publication anymore. It's almost just your lab book continuously moving along and never changing.
It's a blog.
Yeah, it's just a... Yeah.
But you said, Hannes, in the introduction, that there's no formal post-publication peer review. And it's true in a way, but in the sense that we don't change papers after they're published. But we do cite them or not cite them, and which is like maybe the most basic form of post-publication peer review. And then, of course, now you have this thing where people go on social media and either trash or big up some papers, which is not ideal either, but it is, people are talking about papers after they've been through the process. And but peer, as you mentioned, is you know, people essentially looking at stuff that's out there and realizing, wait, this isn't good enough. So it is happening and it will continue to happen, but it would be nice to have something more formal. What could,
right, I think when
what
I
could we do?
I think when I say post-publication peer review, I do mean that a revision follows the review. And I'm wondering if this could replace pre-publication peer review, that a initial review would be maybe only methods or even less, and then the community would tackle that. People who actually care, because maybe as a reviewer you don't actually care, you just do it out of duty. But when Philip sees the newest brainstem electrophysiology, he's gonna review that and he's gonna give comments.
Yeah, I agree with that. Or I try the method and I go, well, you guys are full of shit. I tried this like every single way I could think of doing it and it does not work. Whatever you've published does not work. And I have no way of doing that, right? I could write the author and go, hey, I've tried your method and it doesn't work. And they go back and, oh yeah, but have you used like compound XY from that company? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to spend like 1,000 times more on the same compound, or maybe the compound doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's probably just a bad batch, right?
Yeah, exactly. Let's say you have to get that exact.
Also, you did it on a Friday, and I always do it on a Monday. So,
oh.
Yeah, what about your shoes? If you're like electrically charged, it also doesn't work anymore. So, that kind of stuff, if you just like, there's no way to get like any kind of feedback if people are actually doing stuff. So, like, we're talking about replication not being a thing in science, really. Because if you do a replication, what do you do with that data? Like, you can't even do it anymore, or like publish it in and of itself. But if I could comment under the paper going like, hey guys, amazing, I tried this, works like a charm, I updated whatever, like I use more Triton X, whatever, I would definitely do that. And it's no more work for me, right? I'm already on the website, I'm already reading the paper. Like, why not?
I think that would also be really nice as an author, because you'd then find out how many people are using the things you've done. Because at the moment, I've written a few papers and they're out there. I don't know if, I know some people have cited them, but I don't know if they're using the actual protocols I made. And it would be nice to know if, you know, they're actually useful or not.
Mm. How often have your compounds been made, Chris?
Zero times. They make very beautiful interlocked rings, but they are not useful for anyone. So,
not yet.
I have a methods paper from my PhD that it was just like, oh, we've got this stuff here, this method we developed, let's publish it, see what happens. And that was 10 years ago. And I still get every 2-3 months, I get an email from someone asking, oh, by the way, could you explain this a bit better? I'm trying to use it. And it's usually someone from India or from China, sometimes people from, you know, somewhere in Africa. And it's because it's a super cheap way to do something that, the alternative is to use antibodies and stuff. And it's been so long that I go, oof, I don't remember. which is sad.
But it's fascinating, right? People actually engage with it.
And it would be interesting to see, is it like the same kind of question you get all the time? Is it like you you wrote like two sentences and just skipped some kind of information, and now kind of you get the same kind of question every time?
It's a lot about like, you know, you buy this mixture of dyes and they want to know what's each individual component. And I have no idea because I just bought the whole thing. A lot of the times it's people just wanting access to the paper.
Mm.
So it's like, I would really like to read this, but I'm in a country that has no access to it. And of course I will immediately give the paper out. But, you know, again, derailing which the topic, but that's just the, of course you're allowed. If it's the, well,
no, I think
you're morally allowed.
I'm gonna cut that.
No, you are legally allowed.
You cannot upload it on somewhere, right?
As ResearchGate does it as well.
You can send it, but you cannot upload it.
Then. Yeah, I think it's like a
if it's the final edited version of the journal, you're not allowed, but you can do like
unedited. Or manuscript stage or something. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's enough. The ultimate symbol of the hypocrisy of the journals, because their only input is like the final formatting. Everything else was done by someone else who has their, like, all of it is your rights.
I didn't want to open that sorry.
Oh, this, sorry.
But now it's open. We're going to trash them.
Okay, sorry. I'll stop it.
No! We're also on like 47 minutes, so like, I'm going to cut here. Thank you. No, kidding. To conclude this episode, I want to ask each of you if you had one wish, the magic wand, then you could change one thing in the current peer review system, what would it be? Starting the square below me, Chris, what's your thing?
I really want a bit of what Jan Philip was saying, like a comment section under every paper that is you can comment, oh, this was good or this was bad, and the community can, you know, it's sort of post peer review, but also additional repetition and that sort of thing of results.
Philip, what's your thing?
I think that my biggest problem with peer review is like all the anxiety and stress that goes along with it. I don't even mind the time, but I mind that kind of like I put already that much time into doing the research and writing the manuscript. And like right now I'm in the process of finishing my manuscript, and just the thought of peer review just scares the shit out of me, and it shouldn't be like that. So I think if I could wish for something, it should be that I can publish lower and easier with like proper peer review that's not as painful. Like if it would be okay for me to just publish in Plus One who don't give a shit about whether this is like flashy new science, but still do a pretty good job in peer review, I think that would be that kind of like the scientific attitude changes. I can publish anywhere, still get a proper peer review, and it's fine. Doesn't have to be flashy.
Now, my immediate wish, the thing that I think needs to be addressed sooner, is either to remove profit from the system, and therefore we all work for the benefit of science, and we do it because we think this is important, or we maintain profit, but we pay peer review. It is, you know, I don't think this is controversial. And the fact that I don't longer do peer review unless the journal is open. I've said this to my PI, and I will continue to go like this. There was a guy on Twitter recently, it was a guy who was an academic, and he went to work in a private company. And because he was still an expert in the field, he was asked by a journal to review a paper, and he sent them an invoice. and it's sort of like, you know, detailed. And he said, this is exactly what we do when we want someone else to do work for us. This is the hours, this is the rate, and it's not asking to be paid immediately. It's just saying, this is how much it costs. If you're okay with it, we proceed. And, you know, everyone was kind of clapping and laughing, and because it sounds so outrageous, but at the same time, this is how everything else works. So if they're keeping their profits, then they should share with people doing the work. This is the minimum thing that should happen. Or we just go into a completely free system and we do it for science.
I think that's an extremely good wish.
Yeah.
If I have to give up my wish so yeah, your wish comes true, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree.
Hannes, what is your wish?
I think the three of you distilled three very different but very important features for the system altogether. It would be fantastic. I think I'm most in line with Philip in that I think the entry in the current system, the entry should be easier and not as strict as it is right now. Like, for example, we talked about reviewers shouldn't be giving comments on if this is appropriate for the journal they selected or not. But then I wish another layer of post-publication peer review and give the authors the possibility to change the manuscript later on. That would be my thing, but everything you said is at least equally relevant. Thank you for that. And thank you so much for joining us today, Pedro.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. You can look forward to one more episode this year. We will wrap up the scientific year with our old friend Ashley. I'm curious to see what people were excited about apart from COVID-related research. Was there anything even? If you want to send comments, questions, or feedback, you can get in touch on Twitter at frnpodcast or email under contact@frn-podcast.com. If you want to support the show, consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com/frnpodcast. Music credits go to Jay Patterson. My personal song recommendation is Like a Hippo. Thank you for listening. You'll be hearing from us next time.